News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
Good morning. I'm Erin McNutt with Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. This is Garden Talk. If you have a question for Rick, you can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. Rick, how are you doing today?
Good morning. It's Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Yeah. We made it to the middle of February.
You know what? That's the one thing nice about Valentine's Day is that, you know you got half of February is past you.
Yep.
And so now we look to the other half of February, which is a little bit shorter than the first half.
This is
and,
true.
and thinking about spring, just saw a picture the other day of some flowering crabs and some cherries and some tulips and daffodils popping up on Vancouver Island.
Oh, wow. So a little bit of hope for us here in the deep freeze.
A little bit of hope for us in the deep freeze. It's coming.
Valentine's Day, you know, first thing that comes to mind is always, you know, the flowers, the roses. Have you guys been busy this week?
Well, yeah, it's been busy for us in our store. We don't do that many cut flowers, but we do a lot of pot flowers, mm-hmm. things like orchids and even pot roses and all those different cyclamen, mums, all those kind of things. People are looking at that and even the cactus and succulent arrangements, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of things changing, but you know what? Roses probably in the world, probably the biggest seller is roses. Did you know that there's basically just under 200 million roses grown, produced?
Really?
For Valentine's Day.
That seems like a lot.
Just think about over $400 billion in revenue from in florist shops around the world.
Wow.
And 73% of them purchased by men. So, So it's quite amazing that the average they say is about 61% of the people celebrate Valentine's Day. So especially for florist shop, it's their what we call for me in the gardening industry, we call it's their spring, right? It's their big time of the year.
It's the official start off, I guess.
It's the official start off. So it's kind of interesting though, but you know, there's a lot of meaning between roses.
Hmm.
And so of course red is a traditional rose.
Yeah.
And so red means I love you. No better way to answer the call.
Yeah.
A dozen long stem roses saying I love you, right? That's the traditional. Yellow roses, to lift spirits and for a general wish of well-being. Pink rose, you can see become all purpose of a classic rose is sentimental and also knowing of love and new beginnings.
Okay.
White rose conveys new starts, expressions of hope for the future, and even an orange rose is a way of exuberance and excitement. So.
So the bouquet you get today might have a little more meaning than you know.
Yeah. And so you can go online, you can look that up. There's a whole bunch of different colors, meanings of different colors. Some are red and white. Some are, yellow and red. And so there's all different meanings for the color of roses. So if you want to get really technical into the roses, it's just not grab a bouquet of roses. There's actually a meaning behind them.
I love that. So, we have a call here waiting on the line, so we'll just we'll jump into that. I don't want to leave them waiting here. It's Nadine in Macklin. Nadine, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm fine. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Now, I've got a little different question, but it still goes for the season. What kind of food should I put out for the birds? Before Christmas, I had tons of birds, and at Christmas time, it's like somebody took them away. I haven't seen a bird.
Hmm.
I have sunflowers in my feeder, but they're still there. It's all still there.
Yeah, what you can do right now is put up some suet cakes. So anything, even if you want to make it yourself, put some of that seed and mix some peanut butter into it.
Yes.
Stick it on a log or something like that if you want.
Yes.
Or you can buy suet cages where you can, you know, put some cages on where the birds can hang from it.
Right.
Something with some more oils and that kind of stuff, that works really well. And if some of the small birds are still around, and things like some Niger seed, you know, the little finer seeds.
Oh, yes.
Work really well. But especially if you look at, like I said, peanuts and that kind of stuff are good for, especially in sunflower seeds. Unshelled sunflower seeds are even better this time of the year for some of the smaller birds. But anything with the oils in it, but that's why they like the peanut butter for it, because it's extreme cold. So really look at that. But right now, you got to remember you want to put them close to where they have some shelter, and that's important. And also, if you really want to bring the birds to your yard, then you put a vessel out there with a little warmer in it that keeps the water open. If you want to attract birds to your yard in the wintertime, if you can have a little bit of open water, so you have to put a bird feeder, you know, either warmer or a trough feeder or something like that to keep it open, then you'll attract tons of birds because they love to have that open water to drink all winter long.
That's what I'm wondering, if someone doesn't have a bird warming water and has taken the birds away, because I used to have a lot of birds, and now there's nothing. It's just beyond me.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, has this been many years or just this year?
Just right now.
Yeah.
Just last month, like January, February. But they disappeared in January.
Yeah, so try your different types of seeds. Sometimes they're just a general mix seeds. I find the birds don't like it. If you go to straight sunflower seeds that are ready shelled, okay?
Then these aren't shelled. I have the black sunflowers, the little black ones.
Yeah. But the black ones will attract things like blue jays and even some chickadees will go after those. But some of the other birds, they can't crack those open as easy, right? So if you get a few, even if you mix them in, get some unshelled ones, and then they'll attract them a little bit better.
Okay, that's a good idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nadine.
Bye-bye now.
All right, we'll get to one more quick call before we go to break. It's Marlene in Saskatoon. How are you today, Marlene?
Oh, good morning. Happy Valentine's Day to both of you.
Happy Valentine's Day. What's your question for Rick?
Rick, I'm wanting to know if you're able to get a plant in for me. I'm looking for the giant white fleece flower. I can get it down east, but I prefer to buy local. Obviously, is that something that you could source for me so I could buy it here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay, so can I just request it now, or do you have them on hand in the spring?
Yeah, we have them on hand usually in the spring, the fleece flowers.
Okay, perfect. I'll be visiting your store. Thanks a lot.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Easy enough. Thanks, Marlene. All right, that takes us to our first break of the morning. If you have any questions for Rick, you can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. This is Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt, joined as always with Rick Van Dyvendijk from Dutch Growers. If you have a question for Rick this morning, you can give us a call or a text at 1-877-332-8255. Rick, we have Cheryl waiting for us in Saskatoon. She called us just as the break started, so we'll get to her so she doesn't have to wait too much longer. Cheryl, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Good, thank
you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I'm looking for some advice about growing aloe vera plants. I've been trying to grow them for a number of years, and they always look very spindly and sick. What do I need to do to get them as healthy and the stalks really thick and firm like the ones that you sell in the garden center?
Okay, so one thing I remember is you've got to have the right type of soil. So you starting these on your own, or are you buying a plant and continuing it on?
No, I just got some little ones from a friend of mine.
Yeah, so make sure when you put them in the soil, don't use regular potting soil, okay? You should use almost like a cactus mix type of the soil, because they need well drainage, because the biggest part about aloe vera is a lot of people, they overwater them, okay? That happens to be the number one thing that happens to them. So you almost can feel them. If they feel like they're soft and you can really pinch them in, then you can water them. But if they're nice and you know, firm, all the branches, if they're firm, then you don't need to water them at all. So especially in the wintertime, you don't have to water them very often. And so that's number one key for that, is the right type of soil. So using a cactus type of mix or a succulent type of mix, and then also make sure that you basically stick your finger in the water and in the soil, and you should feel no moisture at all before you water it again. And also just touch the branches, the leaves, and if they almost should start getting wrinkly a little bit, and then you could add water again, and they'll firm right up when they take water in, and then they'll store that water for a long time and supply itself. So that's the key. And you can also use a cactus mix, because aloe vera also like a high more potassium in their soil. And so use a cactus mix type of fertilizer, and you only want to fertilize them about every month the most, and you can even go every second month. You can fertilize a cactus is probably every.
Is there a special kind of fertilizer they like?
Yeah, just use a cactus fertilizer because it has low nitrogen, but a little higher in the phosphorus and potassium, and then like I said, about every second month is lots for the aloe vera.
And in the wintertime, are they okay with having a little bit less light, or do they need to have a grow light to work to grow properly?
Grow lights are fine, but just as much bright light as you can give them, and even a little bit of direct sunlight is better for them as well, okay? So as long as they get a little bit of direct sunlight, a lot of times that's not very hard in the wintertime because the sun's so low, the sun shines right in farther into the house, right? And so give them some direct sunlight if you can, and that's all they need. Even if they get a couple hours, that's fine.
All right, I'll try that out, and hopefully I get some nice, healthy plants.
Perfect.
Good luck, Gerald.
Thank you.
Bye now. Speaking of plants that you can have around, we were talking a little bit during the break here about houseplants that might be a good idea.
Yeah, like houseplants clean the air amazingly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, aloe vera, let's say, okay? Aloe vera is great for taking formaldehyde and benzene out of the air.
Okay.
Okay? So that's one plant there that you have. It does great for spider plants. It's probably one of the better ones. It's like benzene, formaldehyde, and some carbon monoxides out of the water. Snake plants, let's say, everybody loves snake plants.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of formaldehyde because we get formaldehyde a lot from our carpets and everything else, our furniture. It's all the different stuff that they put into making things. Golden pothos is another one. There again, golden pothos and snake plants, they've even used them up in the space station, right, to clean the air,
yeah,
to do tests and that. So great one for taking formaldehyde, dracaenas, cleaning varnish and oils out of the air. Fig trees, again, benzene and formaldehyde. Same thing with English ivies. Palm trees, all kinds of benzene, like some words I can't even say.
the heavy-duty stuff.
The heavy-duty stuff. Philodendrons is another one. That one's a great one for taking different formaldehydes. And formaldehyde is probably the biggest thing we need to clean in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different things, like I said, in the home that releases formaldehyde. Peace lily, great one for low light areas. People love that. That one's formaldehyde, benzylene, tricholide, torlu, and exiline or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different chemicals that'll take out of the air. So people can just go on to Google. NASA's done a lot of studies for the space stations, other space facilities. And also you can just go on to Pinterest and indoor plants, air purification. You can go on all kinds of those things and find out different plants, that how they clean the air and which ones are better at it.
Yeah.
And it's people are really getting into, what plants do. And the whole thing is, if you have plants, it's been proven, house plants or any kind of plants in the workplace or in the home, change the mood and help mental health.
And I know, like, we kind of loaded up on house plants kind of toward the start of the pandemic, I guess almost a year ago now. And it really does make a difference, you know, a bit of a breath of fresh air in your house, and just makes it look nice too.
Yeah, it really does change, how we feel, and how when you look at a plant, it just gives you that whole different feeling inside, and just, yeah, for a whole, especially when you got such a long winter.
Yeah.
Mental health has been huge. It's been a big topic. So that can do a lot of things to help change that, and also to clean the air and make it more healthy for you.
An added bonus. It looks nice, and it does some stuff for you, too.
Exactly.
We have a couple texts that we can get to before we take our break for news. This one is coming from Craig in Regina. Says, we grew Yukon Gold potatoes last summer and want to know if we can grow them in the same spot this year in the same soil.
Yeah, best any ground crops, so whether potatoes, you know, onions, radishes, all that, can anything grow on the ground, rotate your crops. It's very important. Because if there's any kind of fungals or diseases or even insects that are in the soil, they'll be in the same area as where you had them before. So always rotate your crops. So now go to a place where you put your potatoes where you might have had above ground, like, you know, beans and that kind of stuff. So rotate them into a different area of the garden. It's so important. You're going to have troubles if you keep planting in the same area all the time. Take McCain's, okay? Mm-hmm. McCain's grows a lot of potatoes for French fries, all that kind of stuff. A lot of times they don't own a lot of land. What they do is they rent land, because what they'll do is they'll grow a crop in the ground, in the field, and then once they're harvested, they'll actually get the farmers to go in and rotate a different crop for another 2 to 3 years before they'll plant potatoes back in that same field again.
Hmm.
So that's why it's important, because they don't want to have, obviously, have a grow up potato that has, you know, potato scab on it. You wouldn't want to buy that if it's in the store in the bag. No. So it's very important to rotate the crop.
All right. We'll do probably one more before we go to break here. This is Laura from Regina Beach asking, what is the most effective way to deliver humidity to Calatheus ferns?
One of the best way is to use a pebble tray.
Okay.
And a pebble tray is just a little bit larger tray that you put underneath your plant. You put rocks in it, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you set your plant on top of the rocks so it doesn't sit in the bottom of the tray, and then you just fill your tray with water so that the water's not touching the pot, but it's in the rocks. Now you have evaporation that will evap up evenly right up through the plant. And that's probably the number one easiest way to put humidity for your plants.
All right. And just a comment on one of the callers that we had earlier this morning. Maureen in Wilkie says that they have two electric waterers outside, one for birds and one for cats. Woodpeckers, sparrows, blue jays, they all come to take a drink. And that's one of the calls we had earlier today about getting more birds in the yard.
Oh, that's perfect. Thanks for that text. But it's true. They have open water. I know up down in our nursery, we have natural streams running through, and there's open water, mm-hmm. and there's all kinds of birds that stay the whole winter long, even some robins.
Just because they knew they had something to snack on and some water to drink.
Yep, lots of native chokecherries and cranberries and everything else in open water, and they can survive down there, and it's protected in the valley.
It is interesting. I was noticing kind of as I was getting ready to go this morning, I was hearing more birds than I thought was normal for this time of year, but maybe it's just because so many more people have the bird feeders going this year.
Yeah, well, we out of the acreage we have, there's a flock, probably about 60 birds. I'm not sure what they are, but they're sort of a gray with a little bit of a white belly.
Hmm.
But because there's a big bluff beside us that has chokecherry still in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they're staying around. So it's quite amazing.
Lots of opportunity to snack.
Yep.
You're listening to Garden Talk. If you have any questions for Rick, you can give us a call or a text. It's all one number, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Erin McNutt. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. You're listening to Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. And Rick, we already have a call on the line. But if you also have a call that you would like to get into Rick, you can give us a call or a text. It's all one number, 1-877-332-8255. Janice in Saskatoon, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. What's your question for Rick?
I have a garden spot out close to Wauqot. And thinking ahead to gardening, I've been wanting to ask him this question for a while.
Yeah.
I've been trying to grow corn out there for about 4 years now. I used to grow corn just fine when I was south of the city here. But every year now when I try it, something goes wrong. And lately, it's fine when it comes up, germinates, comes up beautifully. About July, it starts to turn rusty orange on the bottom. Starts from the bottom up, just turns rusty orange, and then it doesn't form cobs. And I'm almost given up on growing corn in that plot, but I'm not sure what's going on.
So So a couple things you want to do. One is to keep the health of the corn up. You want to make sure that there's lots of nutrients in corn. Uptake a lot of nutrients, a ton of nutrients. So okay. Depending on how good your soil is out there, and I'm not sure out in Walker area what the soil is like, but you want to make sure that the pH of the soil is not too high. Okay. And sometimes that can happen in areas, especially around where the water is and that. Your pH can get too high, and then they can't take up nutrients. Then you'll get things like rust happening and different fungals that'll happen on the corn. Now, also, if you can, if you're also having trouble with those kind of things, if you can set up a drip system and rather than overhead system, that helps as well. Don't plant your corn too tight. Okay, so they're too close together. Make sure you thin them out is important. But, I mean, you probably learned all these things from your other garden, your Saskatoon, you were saying, right? So,
South of Saskatoon, yeah, we used to grow corn fine.
So how's the sunlight in that area? Is the same as, is there lots of sunlight in that area?
Yes. I'm on the edge of a garden spot. It is across the road from a farmer's field, but there's lots of space,
So lots of space and lots of air movement. So that's mm-hmm. two things that are important for corn. But what nutrient content is huge, so keeping them healthy. So even using those alfalfa pellets and even working that into the soil, it has so many micronutrients in it that, you know, like boron and magnesium and calcium, that it helps to help those plants prevent getting those kinds of fungals and diseases, okay? So try something like that. Work some alfalfa pellets into the soil before you plant, and that'll help quite a bit. And even if corn, especially, even if you can get some compost, like sea compost or even, cow manure or sheep manure, work mm-hmm. that into that area, especially where you're going to put your corn. Okay. They'll love it, and they'll just eat it right up.
Okay. Thank you. Do I have time for just one more quick question?
House plant,
my peace lily. I think I asked you this some years ago, but another plant, the leaves turn brown on the edges all the time, and I try to get the water down to the roots, but it just I can't seem to get it so that the leaves aren't turning brown on the edges. I haven't had a bloom on it now for quite a while either.
Number one thing is that obviously they don't like direct sunlight. Okay. They want to have bright light, but not direct sunlight. That's important.
Otherwise,
you will get some browning on the edge of the leaves. Another one is the type of water you use is very important. The best way to do it is melt snow water this time of the year and wait till it gets up to room temperature and then use the snow water to water the peace lilies, okay?
Okay.
That's important. Don't use straight tap water because you will get brown edges a lot from the tap water, okay, from the, especially if you're in the bigger cities and that kind of stuff.
When we don't have snow, what kind of water would I be wanting then?
You can use rainwater, or if you have to use tap water, let it sit in an open bowl for at least 24 hours, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that because I have waterers that I usually fill and, you know, they sit. But
yeah, so let it sit in an open bowl, not a closed vessel.
So it has
to be an open bowl.
Okay.
So like a salad bowl or something like that, and mm-hmm. then you can pour it into your watering can or whatever afterwards, right?
I see. Okay, yeah.
But leave it in an open bowl and then let it sit for at least 24 hours before you use it again, and you can collect rainwater or you can use reverse osmosis water is okay too. The only thing is you have to be very careful when you use reverse osmosis water. You have to add the nutrients back, and you have to use a more of an organic fertilizer because the filters on reverse osmosis take all the nutrients out of the water, okay?
All right,
So you have to put it back into it. It's very important. So fertilizing is huge when you use that type of water.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you for your call, Janice.
Yes.
You too.
Well, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Lots of things to give a try there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are starting to get closer and closer to when people can really start to dive in to get seeds going. What are things that people can start trying out now?
Well, right now, if you're looking in February, you still want to make sure if you haven't put your geraniums started, if you want to start your own geraniums, your seed geraniums, mm-hmm. you have to get started really quick. Otherwise, you're not going to have flowers until later on in the summertime.
Okay.
So important begonias, you want to start right now, like your wax begonias or your non-stop begonias. Now is the time to get them going. And when you're looking into basically week three of February, now you can start your petunias and your pansies. And your verbena is another flower you can start. But if you also, for vegetables, there's a bunch of peppers you want to start.
Okay.
Your hot peppers. But you can start getting some of your cherry tomatoes. You can start getting into starting those right now. And also celery, if you like growing your own celery.
You need
to start those now, otherwise you won't have very much celery to start off this time of the year. So those are some of the things. Once we start getting to March, then all kinds of things, impatiens, lobelia, Spanish onions, more tomatoes, dusty millers, lots of flowers, so you can start collecting all your seeds for what you want to start in March. But right now there's a few. And Aaron, always make sure that you can always, when you go to your seed shop or you got your seed catalog or what are you looking at, look at your days to maturity. And it'll say that for flowers, it'll say that for vegetables. If you look on the back of the package, it'll say days maturity. And just think, remember in Saskatchewan, you look at about, you're going to plant out so many days before the last frost. So I go from the May long weekend and I work my way back. So if it says, 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 12 weeks from when you want to put out to the yard from last frost, go from that, basically, I would say May the 20th.
Okay.
Work your way back, and that's when you want to see them and get them started in the house.
Okay, so you definitely have a little bit of time for most things, but there are a few that you should get going now.
There's some things, like I said, like the geranium impatiens, begonias, those flowers, celery. That's important to get started right now.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll continue to answer your questions. You can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning and happy Valentine's Day. You're listening to Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt. Looks like we have inspired some people with our chat about getting gardens started, Rick, because the phone lines are lighting up. We have Lorraine in Saskatoon getting things started for us. Lorraine, how are you this morning?
I'm good, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
So last year I thought I would be smart and I prepped my Jiffy pots for seeding this spring. But, of course, I brought them in to plant, and the soil is so dry. And how do I wet that soil? I felt like taking it all out and making a big mud pie out of it.
No, you don't want too much moisture, okay, because you just want to hydrate them a bit. So I find – so these are Jiffy pots. Are these like Jiffy 7s with the peat already in the pots, or are these ones that are just a peat pot that you're going to put soil into?
Yeah, exactly. And I used some of my own soil and part of a bag of potting soil that I had left from last year.
Yep.
And I just set them up in my garden shed and brought them out a little while ago to plant.
So your best thing to do is basically to take the soil back out of the pot again, put it into a pail, and add a little bit of moisture at a time, and then work it into the soil. And then basically what you want to do, so you're basically going to take away the extra work that you started getting ready. And so, because what I want to do is you can water them thoroughly if you want. You want to leave it in the pot and then let them sit for a while to dry out a little bit again before you plant into them, okay? Because what happens is that if you wet them too much, they'll be really wet at the bottom and then be dry at the top, okay, where your seed is sitting. But your roots, you can start dapping off at that time then, where your seedlings will rot off right at the soil surface. So like when I'm preparing a batch of soil, is that I will wet the whole batch of soil. So I just get some moisture, almost as if I'm trying to take that so the soil doesn't have dust in it, okay, basically. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I water. When I start my seedlings, I just use a mister bottle. I don't use a watering can or anything else. I use a mister bottle to keep it moist. So once I have the moisture in there, the moisture underneath the soil is not going to go away because there's no plants to take away the moisture, okay, yet. The roots haven't started yet. It's just the top where the seeds are. So you just want to use a mister to keep them wet. So I wouldn't stick your whole pot into the water and soak it or anything like that. Or if you want to water it so that the water just starts coming out to the bottom of the pot and then stop, okay?
Okay.
And that's all you need is just enough to get a little bit of moisture in that pot, but not too much. You don't want to get them over wet because you'll have lots of problems with seed if they get too wet.
Okay, well, thank you. So probably the best, better thing to do is to just have a pail of soil ready to go in the spring and then bring it in and dampen it.
And that's the way I do it in the greenhouse all the time, okay. Rather than have them pre-done, okay?
Good idea. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Lorraine.
You can get your fingers into the soil, and you can actually feel what the soil is like, and you can feel the moisture in it. That's the way I like it, rather than not seeing what's in the pot.
Right.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I know. All right, we have Danny on the line waiting for us for quite some time here. Danny in Saskatoon, what's your question for Rick?
Hi, I am wondering about celery. You had mentioned we could start celery soon, or if not now.
Yeah.
And I just wondering if there's any tips for celery. Last year I tried celery, but I found they just got really leafy instead of stalky.
Yeah, so making sure that you got an area that has lots of sunlight, that's huge in your garden, okay?
Oh, okay.
They want lots of sunlight, so don't put them in a place where they'll be shaded by the corn or shaded by something else. Get a place in the garden where they get lots of sunlight and also lots of air movement, and then they'll get more stalky for you. So don't put them too tight together or mixed in with some other plants where there's not a lot of air movement. And then you'll find this. But number one is sun, is that they want to be in one of the hotter places in the garden, and they'll do just fine.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Danny.
Bye.
All right, we have Mel in Saskatoon on the line. Mel, what's your question for Rick?
Well, this is about our orchid. We moved here back into the city the end of October. This poor orchid got put on a bedroom shelf. And then just 2 weeks ago, I looked at it, and if the stupid thing doesn't have a spike on it with six buds on it, it hasn't been watered until yesterday, and it's kind of like Aaron's African violet that shouldn't be blooming where it is in the basement.
Yeah, okay. That's perfect. So just what you want to do is it in a place where it still gets bright light right now, or just...
Well, it's on an east window, but it does get some light in there.
Yep. Perfect. That's all it needs, because now that it's starting to bud out, and you're having a stalk, but you want to get some flower, if you can get a spot where in the east window is fine, or a spot where it gets just a little bit of direct sunlight right now, that'll create that plant to take energy into the leaves and help support those flower blooms. But as soon as it starts, the buds start to open up, you want to take it out of the direct sunlight, because they'll bloom a lot longer, okay? And then what you want to do for that plant also, once it finishes blooming, which will be a couple months down the road, then that's when you want to transplant it and put it into a different size of pot with some new bark mix, okay? Because a lot of orchids, especially philodendrons, the greenhouses plant them into a moss, which is, they use that because they're going to be transported and sitting in the store where they don't get watered as much and everything else. So if you put it into a bark mix, they'll do a lot better. Okay, that's more their natural habitat where they like growing into. So, but don't do that when they're starting to form its bract or when it's blooming. You want to wait till it's finished blooming, and that's when you want to transplant it.
Okay, yeah, because the roots are really starting to come out of the top, and I mean, it's been transplanted once, and then, like you say, I just forgot about the stupid thing.
and that's what they'll do sometimes, is they'll actually, under a little bit of stress, that's when they want to produce their flowers, because then that's when they want to produce their seed, right? So that's why you put them under a bit of stress, and that's when they want to flower.
Okay, then. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mel. All right, we have one caller on the line here waiting for us. It's Russ in Regina. Good morning, Russ. What's your question for Rick?
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I have a barrel cactus. It's 20 years old, and it's starting to turn black, and it looks like it's shrinking.
Yeah, you might have a fungal in it. So what you want to watch is that with the barrel cactuses, you don't want to overwater them, number one. Nope. But if it has a black, getting too black, and you might have a fungal that got into it. What you can use on them is you can actually spray them with a copper sulfate, okay, which is called Bordeaux.
I appreciate it.
With Bordeaux, that's about what I would probably use. And just watch your moisture, let it go dry between waterings big time, and also make sure that you're in a place where it has lots of sunlight, especially this time of the year. Okay.
All right, I appreciate that.
Okay.
Right. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you very much.
All right. We have a couple of minutes left and we have a few texts to get to if you want to do a bit of a rapid fire round with me, Rick. All right. First up is Linda in Saskatoon. Linda is curious about the fast growing shade trees that might work best in a city backyard.
Fast growing shade trees for backyard. Mm-hmm. Linden trees are pretty good. They look good. They're a little slow to get started, but then they just take off. Maple trees, if you have the room. But there's also some new maples out there that are more narrower and more upright. So like Red Rocket is one that grows very fast and is more not so wide. Or you can get the Silver Cloud Maple, which is huge, like a big old poplar, right? So those ones grow really quick. And if you have more moist areas, there's Prairie Horizon Alder Tree,
okay,
which loves the moisture and not quite as messy as a willow tree. And but it'll take up in areas where there's more moisture, especially in our heavy clay soils. A lot of people have that wet corner of the yard.
Yeah.
That Prairie Horizon Alder does perfect in those type of areas.
Perfect.
And grows very fast.
We have Dustin in Saskatoon. This will be our last one, but we'll answer the rest of these texts off air here. Dustin from Saskatoon is asking if Valiant grapes are a good variety for here. And do you sell them with fruit already being produced, or do you got to wait a few years?
Yeah, the ones we have some fruit right on the vines already.
Perfect.
But you want to make sure also plant a different variety. So at least two different varieties to get to cross-pollinization is very important. So put a Valiant and a Betta or a Bluebell or another variety with them, okay? Just don't plant all Valiant.
All right, and that takes us to the end of the show. Wow, that last half went by quick. We had so many callers.
That's good.
But as always, thank you so much for participating, giving us calls and texts. We really appreciate it. You can do the same thing next week with Rick Van Dyvendyk and myself. Just give us a call or a text. And you have been listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.